Diamondbacks baseball.
And he corks one way back. And it is gone.
The D-backs BP show.
Fly ball to left. Hit pretty well by Lamb at the wall. It's gone.
Diamondbacks radio network.
There's a shot to center field. Parr on the run. Can't get it. He gets by him. All the way to the wall. Bounces more towards center. Marte turns second. He heads for third. Tony Perez-Chicas racing into the plate. Here comes the throw. It's high. He is safe.
D-backs BP show.
Welcome to our weekly Gab Fest as we try to get you ready for a 2020 baseball season when it happens. Our producer engineer is Leo Gilmartin, our technical director tonight, Luke Robbins, with Steve Berthume, the television voice of the Arizona Diamondbacks from the TV side.
You always have a snarky tone when you say that. Have you noticed this, Leo?
Yeah,
Mike
there's
always
a reason
has,
for that. There's very yeah, good
what,
reason for that.
What is the reason exactly?
Our medium.
Oh, the radio side?
our dime, our dance floor, Bert.
Right, fair enough. Fair point. Thought show host.
Guys, we continue to see rumors and conjecture about what could happen with the 2020 baseball season, and yet there still is not a proposal. As of now, Major League Baseball has not brought a proposal to the Players Association for them to consider for 2020, despite a former player yesterday breaking news that we had spring training dates and an opening day schedule. It's not the case. There have been concepts that have been discussed, and Ross Stripling of the Los Angeles Dodgers told The Athletic today that the Players Association is expecting that they will receive some sort of a proposal within the next coming days from Major League Baseball on what could be an initial idea on how to get the season started. The problem is we just don't have a whole lot of specifics, but if we take the pretty consistent information we've had about when a potential start could be at the end of June or beginning of July, we're starting to get to the point where information needs to get into the hands of people that are planning, Bert. And I think that that's probably the further we get along on the calendar, the closer we get to potentially having ideas. And who knows, maybe by next week we have better information than we do right now.
Yeah, Mike. I mean, we've had a number of leaks or theories or different guys writing different ideas. Hey, here's what some people are talking about. And it's all speculative, and there's not a whole lot of substance to it. But you're right. If you want to salvage, let's say, an 80 to 100 game season, then you're right. The timeline is starting to catch up to you a little bit here, and there does need to be a plan put forth by Major League Baseball to the Players Union, I would think, sometime in the next week or two.
And I think a big part of it, Leo, is that the plan is, whatever a plan ends up being, is going to be very complex, because not only is it going to have to go to the players for approval on what a schedule would look like and what the season would look like and where it would potentially happen, but there are going to have to be precautions that are taken for the health of players. There was an interesting article today in The Athletic, I don't know if you guys saw this afternoon, about the English Premier League, which they're trying to get ready to start, I think, practices in 13 days. May 18th is when they're planning to start practices. They took their plan, they sent it to doctors and epidemiologists to ask them what they were missing, and received a list of more than 100 questions that the doctors wanted to have answered first. So you would have to think that Major League Baseball and the Major League Baseball Players Association would want to do something similar, at least in terms of making sure that they had all of their ducks in a row before we get going.
I know the Bundesliga, the German league, mm-hmm. had a number of cases reported yesterday. And Leo, that's the other part of this. It's not just, okay, here's Major League Baseball, here's the Players Union, let's have a conversation. There are politicians involved. There are health officials involved. This is a much far wide-ranging scope than just our side and their side.
Oh, there are so many moving parts. You can't even get your head around it, really, when you start thinking about it. And the number one thing, as Mike alluded to with the soccer leagues, is the health of the players is primary, first and foremost. And the fact that we cannot take away testing and services cannot take away from the public welfare. So those things have to happen. But, you know, it's good that they have ideas. It's good that they're talking about things. And like I said, there's so many moving parts, and just to start putting things down on paper, I can't even imagine what that process, what it all entails.
And it's been ongoing, and so let's not act like this is just everybody has been sitting on their hands or holding ideas to themselves. There have been conversations between Major League Baseball and the Players Association, at least to try and keep the line of communication open. It's just there has not been any formal proposal as of yet, so we don't have any idea what is going to happen yet. I wish we had it. Like, I wish there was more information. I wish there was better information for us to be able to share at this point, but I do think that we're getting closer to it. There was another note that I thought it was interest, guys, and again in The Athletic, Sham Sharania, who's the NBA, national NBA writer for The Athletic, was a part of a roundtable yesterday with Pierre LeBrun, who covers the NHL, and Ken Rosenthal, who obviously covers Major League Baseball. And in it, he was talking about the NBA's plan to potentially come back. They're talking about maybe doing the season in Orlando at Disney World or doing it in Vegas. But that the NBA has received guidance consistently from the White House, and that sports leagues in general are receiving guidance from the White House on how to get the season started if they are ready to go. And so that's something else that's of interest, is that there is an alignment. The Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, over the weekend said that he spoke to Rob Manfred, the Commissioner of Baseball, to say we need baseball back. So just keep that in mind, that there are, you know, Bert mentioned the political aspect of this. There are political discussions. There are health discussions at all. But everybody seems to be of a common goal, which is to get baseball back and as healthy as possible, get all of these sports back as healthy as possible.
It was interesting to wake up this morning and read the New York Times and go to the op-ed page, and there's a long piece from Scott Boras, which appeared on the website today. And Scott had another perspective on it, which is in times of crisis or despair nationally, went back to FDR and everything. Baseball has been, in a sense, the glue. Let's keep baseball going through World War II. People need that. So it's a similar situation here, I think. I think that's a sentiment that everybody shares. And it's just there's so many different aspects of our culture, our society, weighing in on this, and everybody seems to want the same thing. It's just a matter of when and how.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be great for baseball to be the first back, or just to be back and be part of that healing process. And I think, obviously, baseball wants to do that, but they want to do it the right way, and they'll continue to talk and kick around ideas and come up with something at some point.
And I do think
you have to be so careful, too. I mean, I'm sorry, Mike, but I saw that Jason Stark was talking to Sean Doolittle of the Nationals, and he was saying, as a player, look, we know how fast a common cold can go through a clubhouse. Once one guy in there gets sick, everybody's sick. It's like infant daycare. You know, one's got it, then everybody's got it. So imagine the precautions necessary in dealing with something like this versus just a common cold that goes through the clubhouse or the flu, whatever it is. I mean, they have to be so, so careful, as Leo was saying earlier.
Yeah, but I do think it's instructive to try and keep an eye on other sports now, too, to see what they are doing in an effort to come back. NASCAR, I believe, is planning to race on May 17th. The Professional Bull Riders Association actually had an event last weekend. Some very interesting stuff at Sports Business Journal on what they did to try and come back with basically a skeleton crew of people around the riders, and how the riders in essence, quarantined on a ranch in their RVs for the weekend where the event was being held. So some really interesting stuff. It was the Las Vegas Invitational, but it was happening in Oklahoma. I'm not sure if it was Las Vegas or Oklahoma is where it was, but there are a number of different
things. Happens in Oklahoma stays in Oklahoma.
No fans, I assume.
And that's a common thread. I was going to ask you about that if you guys watched the KBO this morning at ESPN broadcasting Korean baseball organization games.
I watched the first several innings, Ravi and Eddie tap dancing through a half-hour rain delay doing a Korean baseball game from their basement, basically, over a monitor. Talk about that. But it was interesting to see, I believe, and I'm not sure if this is correct, they pumped in or piped in some white crowd noise, not cheering per se, but just sort of people talking in the background like they do in a movie. So it made it sound over the air while I was watching kind of like a normal baseball game. So the fact that there were no people in the stands, no fans, it wasn't quite as jarring because there was no echo effect of just a couple of people talking on the field. I also noticed that while the umpires were wearing gloves and masks, the base coaches were wearing masks. Very few of the players in the dugout who were sitting all together in a row were wearing masks. Almost none were. So obviously they have some, I think it's optional for the players.
Optional for the players.
It's recommended they do.
They're recommended if they're not playing,
But it seemed like the people on the field who were close to other people were taking precautions, like the coaches and umpires, as I mentioned. But the players, for the most part, were not wearing masks.
Yeah. I watched for about an inning. It was just good to see baseball. The one thing I noticed, it's really kind of getting into details, is that the camera angle and the way that stadium was, so there wasn't a lot of empty seats right behind the plate that you could see that were visible. So,
yeah, that helped, actually.
Which is that home plate or that center field camera is what you get so much of your action from. So, but when the ball went into foul territory or went in the outfield, it was definitely a different feel. But it was still baseball. It was still nice to see.
Well, Leo, you're going to have to record a lot of crowd noise. I hope that you have a lot of white noise handy for the radio broadcast this year. That's
going to
be the case.
Going,
we're not going to have fans to start.
You're going to be like the guy in Bull Durham recreating the game.
Yeah,
the voice of the Durham Bulls, Teddy Garland,
Willie Foster.
One ball and no strike to Willie Foster.
I thought he was going to be more like Monty in Major League, where he's cheering and listen to these fans. All right, way to go! Yeah, that'll be
my skill set is more
for nothing, folks.
My skill set is more Monty than it is anything else.
It's not the best engineer in the league for nothing, folks. Coming up on Cubs Greatest today, we'll hear Greg Schulte's memories of Game 1 of the 2001 World Series and some of the highlights from that one. And up next, take two, we will attempt to be joined by the pitching coach for the Arizona Diamondbacks, Matt Hergis, next. This is the D-Banks BP Show.
Diamondbacks Baseball. This is the Diamondbacks BP Show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
Cubs Greatest coming up in a little bit. We'll hear from Greg Schulte as he relives Game 1 of the 2001 World Series with some of the highlights from Curt Schilling's dominant performance on that day. We are very pleased to be joined now by the pitching coach for the Arizona Diamondbacks in his first season. Matt Hergis is on the line with us. Matt, Mike Farron, Steve Berthume, Leo Gilmartin, how are you this evening?
Gentlemen, how you guys doing?
Great. We're good, man. It's good to have you.
Well, I'll tell you what, I need to publicly apologize for last week. I totally dropped the ball on you, and I had trouble sleeping all week thinking about it. And I was gonna extend my apology personally, but you know what? This needs to be done publicly. So I'm sorry. Forgive me for that.
You're a stand-up guy, man. Yep. We've always said that on this show. And in the 4 weeks that it's existed, you have been at the top of our list.
And you're forgiven.
I just want to point out that if that's what's going to kill your sleep issues or lead to sleep issues, but you're a far greater person than any of us are. So,
I will point out that after this interview, we will probably owe you an apology, so we'll all be even.
Yeah, we have to issue one every week, pretty much anyway.
So good deal.
Matt, what's the last, seven, almost 8 weeks been like for you? What have you been doing?
Well, I've been doing a lot of stuff that my wife wants me to do. I painted two rooms in the house, and after the first one, I said, never again. And then a week later, she's like, listen, we got another one. I said, okay, well, this will be the last one ever. But no, that's all I've been doing. But then obviously the family time, and shoot, I've been on Zoom more than I could ever dream of being on. It's been a great tool for us, but it seems like every day at some point I got to set an alarm and get on a Zoom call.
I know how you feel. Matt, it's interesting in talking to coaches and managers and players about keeping busy during the downtime here. Position players are one thing because I imagine you can go in your backyard and hit off a tee until you drop from exhaustion. But pitchers, very, very different thing. It's so regimented. You're going to throw X number of pitches on these number of days, and everything is laid out. How are you accomplishing that with your pitchers while everybody's basically in their own backyards?
Yeah, well, it's actually tough because we're not allowed to organize anything. So really – I would love to go over to Merrill Kelly's house and watch him throw a bullpen, but it's just not something that we can do. So keeping in touch with these guys, we have them log what they're doing exactly down to the pitch, down to the throw, if they've thrown a bullpen, if they've thrown a flat ground, how many pitches did they do. So we're staying current with what they're doing. So when this thing cranks back up, and it could go pretty quick, we have an idea where to go with these guys, especially – you know, the starters that need to be built up. Now, it's going to look different. We all know it's going to look different, and it's going to be more like an early spring training or just after spring training where we got to build these guys like three innings. Like the first game of the season could be a three- or four-inning stint for our starter. So
yeah,
knowing what we're doing with these guys going in is critical, and they've been great. Bum's been kind of in the dark. You know, he does that from time to time when you can't even shoot. You can get a hold of Donald Trump before you get a hold of Madison Bumgarner. But other than that, it's been great. Guys have been really responsive. They know that when this thing cranks back up, it's going to go fast, and they're going to be ready. And, shoot, the other day, I'll share this. We did a Zoom call with the pitchers and Archie Bradley, who's – I think he's our bullpen leader. He had some really, really good things to say. He got us fired up with just his mentality right now. He's like, listen, I want to be ready to come back. But that's not good enough. I want to come – when we come back – we want to be ready to win. And that's kind of been the culture so far with Torrey and how he's navigating through these times is, listen, we're not just going to feel this out. When we come back, we're going to be ready. We're going to be ready to win. Whatever division that is, that's what we're going to be ready to do.
How were you feeling when everything got suspended? How were you feeling? Your new position, new team from a coaching standpoint. How were you feeling? Were you – obviously, you were probably excited to get started, but were you feeling comfortable? Did you get to know the guys fairly well? Is that helping you communicate with them now?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. When I first got hired, the Diamondbacks were really proactive with me in terms of getting the relationship thing started and getting it out of the way. So there wasn't that time during spring training where we tried to get to know each other. We kind of started that early. And sure, I mean, to answer your question, I was obviously excited, but I liked how things were shaping up. I liked how Bum was throwing. I liked how Merrill Kelly started to throw there. Zach Gallen, I mean, we're in love with this guy. He started looking good. Just overall, the feel of it was we're ready to go, and we're getting there. We're getting closer, ready to go, and we like how we're looking. So, it's like everybody else. I mean, it's a super, it's a bummer what's going on, but it is what it is, and we're going to make the most of it. We're going to be positive with this. I mean, it's not like we're the only ones dealing with this, everybody. So where do we go from here? Well, we prepare ourselves to get going. And when MLB says, listen, or when our legislators or our leaders say, hey, we're ready to do this, we want to be ready. And I think, again, like I just mentioned, our guys know that, and they're preparing. And it's pretty awesome to see what they're doing and how they're going about it and just their mindset with it.
Have you had conversations with other pitching coaches around the league? And are you guys allowed to kind of pick each other's brains and come up with ideas and see how other teams are working?
Well, you know what? It's one of those things I haven't. And it makes me wonder why I haven't, except for maybe I don't want to give any way of our secrets, maybe. I don't know. I have
thinking.
Friends that obviously that are pitching coaches and I'd love to hear, what they're doing. But, again, Torrey's been leading this thing, and he's been doing such a great job with it. He's been not just proactive with it, but he's been creative. And that's why I think we're going to have an edge. I really do. I think that me reaching out to other guys, I don't know. I don't want to show my hand. I don't want to, for people to think, that's a good idea. Maybe we should do that. Because that's probably what would happen, because everyone has different ideas. And
I like
you want
it.
To know what everybody else is doing. But I'm kind of keeping that reserve. I'm keeping it close to my chest here and thinking that I don't want to be foolish. I don't want to be arrogant. But I think we got a good thing going here. I think what we're doing, how we're going about it, our Zoom calls and just connecting with pitchers and getting our catchers involved. We're learning more about each other that way. For example, we got a kid, Riley Smith, who –
yeah.
Who revealed something on our last call. We think a lot of this kid. And I had no idea, but this dude, when I make a mound visit to him, if I ever have to, he needs to hear what he's doing wrong mechanically. And now, typically, I won't ever do that. I won't mess with the mechanics, but for him, this is something that he needs to get back on track. So things like that, just kind of the more intricate things about these players that we talk about, and we talk about mentality all the time. Sure, the numbers are there. We have analytics. We have all that. We're up to date on that, I think, as good as anybody. But just the whole mentality of each pitcher and them sharing, that's the big thing, is when I was a player, I got to get on a FaceTime with these guys and talk about it. They've been really responsive, and it's helped me tremendously.
Well, Matt, I'm really glad you mentioned Riley Smith, because just to make your job even more complex here, and as you said, nobody's got a blueprint for this. Everybody may be handling it differently. But once we do get going again and play actual major league games, I'm assuming now, and I don't know this for certain, that there might not be minor league baseball. So it's one thing to get Mad Bum Reddy and Zach Gallen and Luke Weaver and all of those guys, but what about at the same time making sure that Riley Smith and maybe Emilio Vargas, who are on the 40, or Matt Tabor and Josh Green, who are not on the 40, how do you also keep those guys going at the same time? Because theoretically or possibly, you can't say, well, go to Visalia, make a couple of starts, and we'll see where you are. These guys have to also get their work in, don't they? How do they do that?
Well, there's no doubt, and I think we're hoping that they'll give us a number of players that we can keep at Salt River to stay hot, meaning we need a pool of guys, a pool of pitchers that if something happens at the big league level, someone if goes down, takes a line drive off the shin, that we have backup, we have reinforcements. So guys like Riley, guys like Greeny, we have a lot of depth now from what I know, that hopefully we'll have those guys to be there, to be ready to throw inter squads, maybe even, you know, I don't know. Who knows what they're going to let us do, but maybe, you know, maybe the Rockies have the same setup and we can play them, or who knows. But I definitely think having a pool of players that we feel comfortable that can step into big leagues and help us, hopefully we'll have that opportunity. Hopefully we'll have those guys down here to stay hot for us.
We're visiting with Matt Hergis, the pitching coach for the Diamondbacks. Matt, I'm just kind of curious overall. I mean, you've outlined a lot of, you know, what you're doing to try and work with guys. But what is kind of your overriding philosophy and message to guys when you came into camp?
Well, that's a good question. I didn't want to be overwhelming with analytics because I know I can scare people off. I feel like I'm fairly well-versed, you know, coming from the Dodgers and the Giants, who were pretty, you know, forward thinkers. But I ultimately knew that being an ex-pitcher myself, and I've said this a million times, it's not my only skit, but it's a big part of my skit, is just, you know, the relationship part of it. And I know if I can show that I care about them, like legitimately, not faking it, but truly interested in them, they're going to listen. And maybe I don't have the answers, but they're going to at least be open to what I got to say. And it's not just me. It's Mike Fetters, who is absolutely phenomenal. It's Mike. It's Alex Koltis, who not many people know. He's behind the scenes. It's Dan Heron, who's a pitching genius in my mind. There's Mike Fitzgerald, who's another guy that it's a collaborative effort. And each one of these pitchers, I think they realize that, you know, this isn't just a one-man show here. But this isn't just I listen to my pitching coach only. This is, we have a collection of really, really smart guys that work collaboratively to basically improve human performance. And that's kind of where I'm coming from. And again, I will never, I wasn't a great player, but there's other things that I knew separated big leaguers from not big leaguers or from the elite big leaguers. And that's ultimately it's mindset. And mindset is the one thing that I think separates people. You a lot of times you can't teach it, but you can enhance it. So that was kind of my skit coming in. Listen, we're going to be in analytics. We're going to be hot in that. I mean, that's going to be a major part of this. But ultimately, how strong your mindset is what's going to help us win a national, a world championship. And that's kind of my skit.
You know, it's really interesting you said that, because I had a conversation with somebody in spring training about something very similar in terms of the technology has obviously changed in addition to the data and information. But how do you try and impart on guys, hey, listen, these are great teaching tools, but when you get out there and you're facing Cody Bellinger with two on in the seventh, the Rap Soto ain't going to help you on your curveball in that spot. What are those things that you try to do to foster the competitive nature to come out and trust the preparation?
Right. These are good good discussions. Really, you have to come from the approach of what are we going to do as a team? What are we going to do together to accomplish what we want to accomplish? And I think that everyone realizes that the people who have the loudest voice, the Robbie Rays, the Madison Bumgarners, the Torrey Lovellos, the Mike Hazens, they're all about winning, period. I mean, that's the bottom line. So what are we going to do together to do that? I mean, we can't do it, you know, alone. We can't go it alone. We can't think that, you know, if I just do my thing. This is a collective thing, and I know that we have the backing. We have the front office who gives us everything we need to succeed. We have a great communicating type manager in Torrey Lovello, a guy who listens, who's not a dictator. He really, what Torrey does is he tries to make the whole environment comfortable enough for these guys to be themselves and perform. And that's, I don't know if I got off track on your question, but that's what's so impressive to me is it's a manager who says, listen, we need to create an environment for these guys to where they can be themselves, they can be comfortable, yet they can be absolute maniacs when they're competing. And that's the one thing that I love about Torrey and I love about our front office is that's what they're about.
That's really good stuff. We really appreciate it. Matt, it's really nice to catch up with you. Thanks so much for spending some time with us this evening. We'll let you get back to painting room number 3 in the house. Did you go with eggshell or something a little bit more creative?
Hey, dude, any of you guys got a haircut? Where can I get a haircut?
You should Leo see Lee. Yeah. I'm glad, Matt, just be glad you're not on our Zoom call. Otherwise, you'd see Leo Gilmartin's beard. And it's, I got to tell you, it's just taken over his entire head.
But I have no hair to get cut, so.
I love it. Well, hey, fellas, again, forgive me for last week, and I'm available at any time.
Well, awesome. We appreciate it.
Thanks,
Matt, stay safe. We hope to see you real soon.
No doubt. Thank you, gentlemen. I really appreciate it.
Welcome back to another one of Gubb's Greatest here on the D-backs BP Show, and we're visiting with Greg Schulte about some of his greatest memories. And, Greg, the Game 1 of the 2001 World Series certainly stands out as one of those. Nearly 50,000 in what was then Bank One Ballpark for the D-backs and the Yankees. But I want to go back just a little bit, because this was supposed to be the year that the Seattle Mariners got through and that the Yankees dynasty was going to end. They'd won World Series in 96, 98, 99, and 2000. What was your reaction when the Yankees moved on to the World Series and you found out the Diamondbacks would be playing them?
Well, I think a little selfishly, I wanted it to be the Yankees just because it was, the greatest professional sports organization around. And they'd won the previous three. I know Seattle had the great year, but they had to get through New York. And with everything that had gone on, I think New York had become, a pretty special ball club to pull for nationwide at that time. So I was hoping it would be New York. It ended up being New York, and we had one heck of a World Series.
And that first game of the World Series at the Bob was a matchup of, one man who's in the Hall of Fame and another who very well should be, Curt Schilling and Mike Mussina. But the Yankees struck first in the first on an RBI double from Bernie Williams. Craig Counsell came up and tied the game for the Diamondbacks, and as we were talking about this beforehand, Counsell didn't have the best World Series necessarily, but he was part of some huge moments.
Yeah, I remember he was the National League Championship Series MVP, and he only had a couple of hits, I think, in the World Series, and one big plate appearance that got him on base for Luis Gonzalez in Game 7, but that's another story at another time. But he took a Mussina pitch, and he hammered it to right. A left-handed hitter, he pulled it, got it out of there.
Mussina into his windup, and here's the 2-1 pitch to Counsell. High fly ball, deep right field, warning track wall, 1-1, and a home run by Counsell. I think this crowd's fired up, Rat.
They want him to come out for a curtain call. There it is.
You know, I looked over to the dugout as Counsell was running the bases, and everybody's, high-fiving each other and, kind of pointing their head down and as if to say, okay, we got this. The Yankees aren't going to, run all over us. We answer right back. And I can say this honestly. Craig Counsell was a guy to get it done, and he was a guy to get it done all year for the Arizona Diamondbacks, was one of their MVPs.
Well, and the best offensive player on the team that year was Luis Gonzalez, and he certainly showed up in that game against Mike Mussina as well.
Now Mussina sent. Here's the pitch, and Gonzalez, a deep drive. There it goes. Way back. Diamondbacks lead it on a two-run homer by Gonzalez. 3-1.
What a great at-bat by Luis.
Mussina, the first two times up, had continued to work him away. He finally tried to challenge Luis inside with a fastball right down at the knees, and Gonzalez took him deep.
3-1 Arizona, their second home run of the night.
Yeah, third inning, he hit a two-run homer. The Diamondbacks were off and running. They end up winning that ballgame, Mike, 9-1. And, you know, offensively, Gonzo had a couple of hits in that ballgame. Reggie Sanders was their cleanup hitter. He was on a couple of times. The middle of the order did a lot of damage, but you go back to Schilling.
Here's the 0-2. Swing and a foul tip into the mid of Miller, strike three, and Schilling, his eighth strikeout of the night.
Threw 102 pitches in that ballgame. I'm looking at my scorebook right now. Seven innings, allowed three hits, struck out eight, walked one. Hit a batter, and then he gave way to Mike Morgan. Again, the game was out of touch and out of reach by that time when he had come out. So Morgan got an inning. Greg Swindell got an inning. And the Diamondbacks ended up with a 1-0 series lead. Remember the Yankees, this was their 38th World Series. as you mentioned, they were trying to make it four straight series wins. And they'd won 40 of their last 51 postseason games coming in, including 11 postseason series. So they were on a roll. And for the Diamondbacks to strike first, that was huge because you had your big horse going out there, Curt Schilling, in that particular ballgame.
Yeah, and you know, Mike Morgan moment had to be really cool. I mean, he made his big league debut at 18 in 1978.
Yeah. Right on to pitch in his first ever World Series. 20 years in the big leagues, we're talking about 42-year-old Mike Morgan.
And no question, it's the biggest game Mike Morgan has ever pitched in. A guy that has pitched in four decades. He's 42 years old, and you know, when the Diamondbacks were celebrating in Atlanta last Sunday night, there was no one happier than Mike Morgan.
But I want to talk a little bit more about the brilliance of Curt Schilling. He was one of the greatest, if not the single greatest, postseason pitcher of the divisional era. What was it about Schilling in big games that made him so good?
I don't know. It's just his demeanor. If you ask me, who would you rather have pitch a game you had to win, Curt Schilling or Randy Johnson, I'd really have trouble with that one. I really would. I would take either one, and I would let you toss the coin and tell me who's going to pitch. I wouldn't mind. But Schilling, it was just something else. I mean, what he did in Game 7, in fact, you know, and even the game at Yankee Stadium, didn't want to come out of that ballgame. He won 22 games that year. He's 22-6 in 2001. And he was 3-0 going into that game one ball game against the Yankees in the World Series. So he had an excellent track record in postseason play, and he got the Diamondbacks off and rolling in that first one right there.
There have been few pitchers in baseball history that have had the combination of power and precision that Curt Schilling has had. And really, it's a very short list of guys with 3,000 strikeouts and fewer than 1,000 walks in their career. I think it's Schilling, Ferguson Jenkins, Greg Maddux, Pedro Martinez, I think, are it. But I know that in terms of individual performances, Randy's perfect game may have been the best in terms of seeing a guy hit the mitt on one night. Was there a better pitcher that you've seen at hitting the mitt as consistently as Curt Schilling did?
Not really. Randy. We talked about Randy Johnson in one of our previous great games about one particular night, but Curt Schilling seemed night in and night out where the catcher set up Damian Miller, Kelly Stinnett, whomever was catching him. Kirk could put the ball in the mitt of the catcher. You know, two consecutive years in 01 and 02, there was a chance that Schilling would end up with fewer walks than starts. And he walked 39 batters in 2001, won 22, lost 6 that year, appeared in 35 games, 35 starts. So only two more walks than games start. And then the following year in 2002, he walked only 33 and he had 35 starts, so he had fewer walks than he had starts in that season when he won 23. I mean, that's remarkable. I mean, that's not giving a guy an extra base. You can imagine what the whip is every year, you know, with when you're not walking away because he's hard to hit, but phenomenal. He was just I feel really blessed. I've covered this ball club, as you mentioned, Mike, from day one. And to watch some of the individual performances, the team performances, to be able to go out there pretty much 2000 through 2003, and again, 2001, 2002, the big years, to watch Curt Schilling and Randy Johnson in the same rotation. There aren't many broadcasters in the history of this game who have had the chance to watch those two guys, two type pitchers like that, go to the mound, maybe a night in and night out over the course of a four-game series and follow it with a win after the other guy had won his ballgame.
The Diamondbacks trounced the Yankees in Game 1. What was the reaction like outside of Bank One Ballpark when you were leaving that evening?
I think by the time I got out of there, most of the fans had left, but I think the fans were really feeling this ball club, and they knew they had Randy Johnson going the next night against Andy Pettit, and they sure liked their chances in that one. So confident, and they were ready to roll, and Schilling and Council got them off and running Gonzo in that first game, and it was a lot of fun.
Game 1 of the World Series in 2001 goes to the Diamondbacks, another one of Gubb's greatest.
Diamondbacks baseball. Diamondbacks baseball. The D-backs BP Show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
Thanks again to Matt Hergis, pitching coach for the Diamondbacks, for joining us tonight. And Governor, for another one of Gubb's greatest. This week, there is more goodies. Actually, if you're got a chance or you're in the car right now and you're looking for something to do, just need to get out of the house, race on over to Salt River Fields. They've created a drive-in movie theater, and I think tonight they're actually doing this. I know that it sounded like tonight was the game, the one that they're doing right with I believe it's
Three Amigos.
O'clock, a special showing of Coco followed at 9:30 by the Three Amigos, which if you've never seen is one of the greatest movies of all time. So get over there to see the Three Amigos.
That's great. That's time. That's really cool. They're doing that. That's fun.
That's a 9:30 kick on Three Amigos at Salt River Fields. And they have a drive-in movie theater. It's open on the weekends, guys. But tonight, as you said, is a special night for Three Amigos.
Will you be there for the 9:30 showing of Three Amigos, Bert?
I will be binge watching 5 shows at once at home
on 5 different screens. What are you, Elvis?
That's right. I'll be watching TV with Nixon. We have a host of activities here at the house.
Oh yeah, it's busy. What's going on over there, Bert? What's going on over at Berthium Manor?
Well, there's the morning dog walk. I'm not painting rooms like Matt Hergis. But there's the morning dog walk and the morning bike ride, and then there's some MLB The Show, followed by lunch. And then lunch, after lunch, there's more video games, there's another walking of the dog, and then there's TV watching.
Does sound like you're busy.
Yeah, well, I got a lot on my plate here, Mike.
I'm tired just hearing that, man.
I'm only one man.
Gosh, I'm just exhausted listening to you again.
I am actually running through a lot of my prep work, all kidding aside.
What you got anything good? I think we should do
no.
it. Leo, we should get a segment here on Bert's prep work because Bert, for those
like
who
it.
Don't know, Steve yes. Berthium may spend more hours than any other play-by-play announcer in America taking notes on
Not
every
me.
Player.
Yes. And of the 10 hours, only one is probably necessary.
Right.
But what I've done is I'm actually flying through the American League West in case we end up playing the Mariners and the Angels a million times here.
Yeah, because we don't know what the schedule's going to be.
Yeah, whatever we end up with. So I'm trying to be as prepared as possible, Mike.
Okay, so if I threw somebody I'd
the suggest
Mariners
you do
at
the same.
You, could you give me something right off the bat? You know, I talk about all of these teams every day in my other job. On, the radio
on your other
show?
I you know, really, let's be frank.
Serious,
Duke carries the show.
That's true.
Duke
but carries but the I show. Just listened to what he says and I write it down.
Work, that's what I do with
work
Josh.
Smarter, not harder. Work smarter,
that's
not
right.
harder.
That's how you got to where you are. Where are you?
So
exactly?
If I throw you a player on the Mariners, can you give me a tasty nugget on them?
If you throw me, is that a radio side term?
No, it's just I was just hungry. I haven't
just
oh,
a
yeah,
broadcast
go
term.
Go ahead, yeah. Go
so
ahead, go ahead,
just
go ahead.
Any player on the Mariners, I can throw something
right.
at you and you'll get it.
As long as I have 24 players that I've done on the Mariners.
Is this like all of a sudden this turned into the who's on first? There are 25
name,
fellas on the Cleveland
This
Indians.
Could become a weekly segment, Name That Mariner.
Give me something on Justin Dunn.
He's not on the list. I only did the guys.
Sheffield. Well, Justin Dunn might be in their rotation. Nobody.
You want Sheffield? I
Justice
Sheffield. Sheffield.
Give me something on Justice Sheffield, left-handed pitcher.
Last year, eight appearances, 7 starts, 0-1, 5-5-0. Did not pitch particularly well at AAA Tacoma, 13 appearances there, won twice at an ERA near 7. First-round pick by the Indians out of high school in Tullahoma, Tennessee. Traded to the Yankees a couple of years later in an Andrew Miller deal. Then they sent him to Seattle. in the James Paxton trade.
There you go.
He is a first-round pick in the 2014 draft by Cleveland.
Well, if that doesn't get you fired up for baseball, I have no idea what will.
Join us again next week when we play Name That Mariner.
You missed a good one on there. His brother's in the Dodgers system, Jordan Sheffield.
That's not that good. I try not to mention Dodgers. It's part of my policy. Unless I absolutely have to.
It's a good group of people, the Sheffields. So we'll continue to play this game.
They're fine people. Mariner. Yeah, this thing could catch fire here.
At any moment, any of us could catch fire.
That's true. It's 105.
Let's hope.
So this Thursday, Fox Sports Arizona, where you can generally see Bert's beautiful face as opposed
that's
to
on the TV
Zoom
side.
Call that we're on. Yes, the TV side. We'll be replaying, I believe it's Game 4 of the 2011 National League Division Series. Is that correct?
You are correct, sir.
In the 50,
Thursday night's round. Throwback Classic. Yep, 50-50 as always is running, and you can participate at dbacks.com/50-50 raffle. That has been a huge success. Game 4, 2011 Division Series on Fox Sports Arizona Thursday night.
You got to remind me, Leo, was that the Paul Goldschmidt Grand Slam game or was that Game 3?
I think that was Game 4.
That was Game 4. Force the series back to Milwaukee.
Yes, it was definitely that one.
That sounds like a Leo segment. Like we have Gubb's Greats. That sounds like a Leo segment. When Leo takes us back through his memories.
Yeah, that's usually food related. They have good milkshakes in Milwaukee. I remember that. They did have those for the postseason as well.
See, I think if we back this up with Name That Mariner, this radio show just explodes.
We're
and
on
by
to
explodes, you mean just like self-immolates and then it
correct.
Doesn't exist anymore?
So anyway.
What else you got there, Mike?
I don't know.
Hey, it's by the way, since we were mentioning the TV side, we should also mention the radio side. Big of me to do, I think. It's Legends Week on 98.7 FM, if you haven't noticed. I know you've been listening. Legends Week on Doug and Wolf all week long. Gracie's coming up tomorrow morning at 9:15. Derek and then BB on Thursday and Webby on Friday on Legends Week. So that's kind of cool.
Kind of glossed over Derek there, didn't you?
No, I've got to keep the show moving. I see what you're trying to do there.
Wow, Bert.
By the way,
the guy that gave you your chance, you'd be a little bit kinder to, but here you are.
I rode by Derek and his son walking through the streets of Phoenix today. Those guys are out there. Derek and Amy and the whole gang, they do a lot of walking. They have a whole loop they go through every day. They're dedicated.
I mean, we all have our routines at this point.
What's your routine, Mike? I'd be curious.
Well, a lot of it is just 6 days of a lack of sleep and consternation over having to work an hour with you on Tuesday nights.
I don't blame you. Now, are you providing input on the D-backs dream team on Fox Sports?
I am going to be Arizona a part Sports? Of this. I don't believe I'm providing input. I've been asked to evaluate it, I believe, with the Gubna and Tom. I'm assuming that Greg Schulte and Tom Candiotti's votes will count twice as much as mine will in this. So, but yeah, that'll be happening on Friday. At 5 o'clock, where the Burns and Gambo program will be putting together the D-backs dream team. Have you been providing input on this? I know that you're an unpaid consultant for the Burns and Gambo show.
I did notice that Burnsy tweeted out. Oh, here we go. Burnsy tweeted out a while ago, day one of the D-backs dream team draft is in the books. It's hard to read. Burnsy took a picture of his sketch pad, and it's the penmanship is sketchy to say the least. Oh, Burnsy has, let's see, Burnsy has Miggy as his catcher, Goldie at first base, and he has a rotation so far of Webby and Patrick Corbin. Gambo has Gracie at first, Ketel Marte at second, and Matt Williams at third. By the way, did you know Matt Williams was managing in Korea?
Yeah,
they mentioned that last
time. Yeah. Signed a three-year deal to go there, I think.
How about that? I know he really wants to manage, but he was a third base coach for a while for Bowmel in Oakland. Jordan, the producer, has Gonzo and Justin Upton in the outfield, Greinke and Robbie Ray in the rotation, and Sarah has Steve Finley in the outfield. Now she went pitching heavy. She has Randy, Dan Heron, and Ian Kennedy in her rotation. So that is the the D-backs dream team on Arizona Sports 98.7 FM, and you can follow along.
Get those rosters in front of you now to be able to look at. And yeah, we'll have that, I think, Friday afternoon, 5 o'clock is when Greg, Tom, and I will be on with that. So, Leo, you won't be participating in that?
No, but I know Bert has been jonesing for a mock draft, so I'm hoping that got your little fix in there.
That'd be a new concept, wouldn't it?
Yeah, no, I'm not part of the dream team, and I'm just I saw that note too, and I'm really excited to see what you guys come up with.
Are 2 minutes.
Pick each team apart? Or are you gonna?
Tom is the
you're
fantasy
like,
expert.
You're like the Mel Kiper. After teams make their picks, you tell them why it was a bad pick.
Yeah, basically.
Okay,
I'll do the who was the former executive that trashed the?
Was it Polian? It wasn't Polian.
Was it Bill
Polian
or was it? Yeah, Bill Polian. It was back in the who was it? The Colts, right? They had the top two picks in the draft or whatever, and he trashed.
Was it Jeff Jord? Yeah, somebody.
No. The Washington University of Washington defensive
Steve
lineman.
Entman.
Steve Entman. And
nice
then there
poll.
Was I think another defensive player. They went at number two, ended up being a really good player. I don't remember who it was.
So you'll just shatter dreams. You're just going to pick them apart and shatter dreams.
I'm all about shattering things, Leo. We will break
the blood drive was a big success, thanks
Huge.
To you guys.
And Matt Hergis participated in that, and his wife.
His wife Jane was there. More than 450 people donated blood last week at Chase Field. So thanks so much to all of you who did that. And thanks, of course, to the American Red Cross and Budweiser for putting that whole thing together.
So some great stuff that's been going on and still some good stuff going on around the valley as we start to emerge from our – you know, we are emerging from our stay-at-home orders just in time for our annual social distancing ritual called summer. So it's good timing, right?
True. We're ready for this.
Good timing overall. We are back next Tuesday. We'll have another one of Gubb's Greatest. We'll have another great guest for you, we certainly hope. And hopefully we'll have more answers on what happens in 2020 with the season. Thanks to Matt Hergis, the Diamondbacks pitching coach, for joining us. For our producer and engineer, Leo Gilmartin, and our technical director, Luke Robbins. For Steve Berthume, I'm Mike Farum. Thanks so much for joining us again for another edition of the D-backs BP Show as we wait for the 2020 season.